So welcome back to the show. Rick Tittle with you, nationally syndicated out of San Francisco and around the world on the American Forces Radio Network. There's a brand new book from Sports Publishing. It's called A Baseball Gaijin, Chasing a Dream to Japan and Back. And we have our author with us, Aaron Fishman. Aaron, welcome to the show. I remember the book, You Gotta Have Wah, and it, you know, followed a lot of the Americans who went from MLB, kept their career alive, going to NPB. But this was kind of different here, what you did here, because you're talking about the pitcher Tony Barnett. He started in Japan before he became a major league pitcher. What was as compelling about his story for you?
Hey, Rick. First of all, thanks so much for having me on. I'm excited to be here. And yeah, first of all, I love that book, You Gotta Have Wah, from the 80s. And it was different, as you said. There were so many different anecdotes, and it didn't focus on one single player. Whereas in this one, Tony, the narrative is centered around Tony Barnett. And he takes such an unconventional route because he's in the prime of his career, on the doorstep of making his major league debut at 26 with the Diamondbacks, when the draw of just such an increase in salary is what pulls him to Japan, but so much else ends up being what makes it so rewarding and what allows him to resurrect his career and transform not only his career, but his life.
Well, yeah, a guy who, very good player at Arizona State, which is a great baseball school, as we know. He gets signed into the D-backs organization, pitched there for a few years, wasn't really happening for him. So he takes a chance on the Yakult Swallows. By the time MLB takes a look at him again, he's basically like Dennis Eckersley, right? I mean, he's like the best closer in Japan. They won the Central League. And at that point, did he think, maybe I missed my big league window? Or did he think, like, I don't care how long it takes?
That's such a good question. And he was ready to go to the major leagues before 32. But he was hit with two major injuries in years 4 and 5 in Japan. And so he had gotten paid pretty well after his 2012 season, his first as a closer in Japan, in which he was pretty dominant. So he got that big two-year contract in Japan, but unfortunately, during the life of it, he was injured a lot those two seasons. And then by the time that contract ended, he hadn't been healthy enough to have a strong year. So by the time he was really good in 2015, his sixth and final year in Japan, that was what earned him that major league contract with the Rangers. And he was even more dominant than ever before, as you mentioned. He led the Swallows, the long-suffering Swallows, to the Japan Series in 2015. And so on the wrong side of 30, he still had so much belief in himself, and thankfully the Rangers did too, and the rest is history. But he was getting a little bit impatient. As much as he loved Tokyo and the friends he made there and all the amazing cultural and travel experiences, he wanted to achieve his lifelong dream in the majors. And he was so grateful to be able to ultimately do that with the help of Don Nomura, his legendary agent, and just the stats. I think the stats spoke for itself. They just jumped off the page. Even though he was 32, he was in demand at that point.
Don Nomura wrote a foreword for the book as well. I think a lot of people don't know, and you point out Tokyo, Yakult is the name of the milk company that sponsors them, but they play in Shinjuku, which is an area of Tokyo, and of course not as well known as the Yomiuri Giants, but the Swallows are a team with a great history going back to the 50s, and they're a Tokyo team.
Yeah, it's kind of like I use the Clippers-Lakers comparison because I was born and raised in Los Angeles, and I'm one of those weird Clippers fans that just likes torturing myself. And I feel like the Yakult Swallows fans are like that too, in a sense. And in recent years, since Tony left, in 2021 and 22, they went to two straight Japan series and won one of them. But overall, like I said, they've been long-suffering historically, and the Yomiuri Giants are like the Yankees of NPB, where they had won something like, I think, like 25 Japan Series or something. I'm not exactly sure the number, but they had way more Japan Series wins than winning seasons for the Swallows over a certain period. So it was just such a big imbalance, both record-wise, but also fan base. They just have a huge fan base. But the Swallows fans that do exist, and now there are a little bit more of them, are just so passionate and diehard. And if you want to win and you showcase the passion, which they believe Tony did, unlike some of these gaijin who are seen as hired hands and they're there for a year and then leave, when you become so identified with that franchise, they just fully embrace you, and they showed him the love, and he showed the love right back.
And gaijin means?
Foreigner is the loose translation. It's a little bit of a slang. It used to be kind of a derogatory term that has since been embraced by the foreigners, and there only are allowed 4 active gaijin per top team roster, so the spots are finite, and if you're not performing, they'll demote you in a hurry, which is what happened to Tony multiple times his first year there.
Got more questions for Aaron Fishman. His new book, A Baseball Gaijin. You know, you think about the haves and have-nots and the Tokyo Dome compared to, I don't know what it's called, but I know the stadium the Yakult Swallows play in has no roof. I mean, it's like almost like a big college stadium in a way, but it's right smack, like everything in Tokyo, it's just jammed into a neighborhood.
Yeah, Jingu Stadium, and I had the pleasure of going there twice in the spring of 2018. I also got to a game at Tokyo Dome, and I thought Jingu Stadium was beautiful. One of the days I was there, it was drizzling, and so their mini umbrella ritual came in handy. That's every time they score a run, the Swallows home fans raise and lower their mini umbrellas, and they're in neon colors, and they sing a certain Tokyo Ondo song, and you're standing the entire time the team is batting. It's just such a memorable cultural experience, unlike any American sporting event I've been to. I haven't been to a European football match, but I assume it's a little bit like that, where people just go wild in the crowd, and it's just such a fun atmosphere, just walking around and just being a part of it, immersing yourself in it.
And then you wait all that time to come back to the bigs, and a lot of people know him as the guy who hit Pujols in the head, right?
That's the name of one of the chapters is centered around that, and he's obviously so much more than that, but it was just such a memorable thing. And I think he ended up apologizing to Pujols 5 times that day, including twice right away, then walked to the plate once more as he's getting up. And Albert Pujols didn't think it was on purpose, but I find it pretty funny. He made a joke in the locker room the next day when I said that you hit him with a 92-mile-per-hour fastball. That's not good. And he said, that's the changeup of most of my teammates around me in this clubhouse. So he definitely has a self-deprecating sense of humor and likes to joke about how he doesn't really throw very hard. But still 92, that's going to hurt, even with a helmet.
No doubt. And the other thing to mention, too, is that this was a family affair, this Japan adventure. He wasn't solo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so his girlfriend Hillary Jones, she was a senior at Arizona State when he started the journey, but she really wanted to be with him, and family was always so important to her growing up, and she didn't want Tony by himself feeling isolated halfway across the world. So she missed her college graduation in May to hurry and get there to be with him. And she was with him the rest of the journey in Tokyo, and over that period, even though their first daughter was born in Arizona, Tony was still playing in Japan over that period. So their youngest, their oldest daughter, Madeline, she was able to spend a couple years in Japan, and that was a big part of her formative experience as well.
Last question for you. I know things get lost in translation. Like, I remember South Korea at the World Cup, their fans wore shirts that said Korean team fighting. It's like, I don't know if the tense is right there. But I do know the Swallows had a campaign called All for Win that was featured there. I shouldn't laugh because I can't speak any Japanese. But All for Win, and Tony was part of that ad campaign, right?
Yeah, he was. And they have a lot of quirky slogan names, but I don't even think that's a distinctly Japanese or foreign thing. I know the Clippers and a lot of other teams, NBA teams, and others have slogans that are a little bit clunky and weird, and it just feels like someone did some type of focus group or something and put words together that don't really go together. But that was one of them. I guess it's supposed to be like all for one, but mm-hmm. evoking winning and victory and that theme. But yeah, he was a big part of that ad campaign, and some of those pictures are included in the book.
Everyone check out A Baseball Gaijin, Chasing a Dream to Japan and Back, a foreword by Don Nomura about Tony Barnett's interesting journey, I should say. And our guest, Aaron Fishman from Sports Publishing. Aaron, congratulations on the book, man.
Thanks so much. It was a pleasure joining you. I really appreciate it.